I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. It's estimated that about 20% of the American workforce has what could be described as a bad job. The pay is low, there are few or no benefits, employees have little say over conditions at their workplace, and there's little opportunity to get ahead. Our guest, Zeynep Tan, says that isn't just bad for workers, it's harmful to their employers, affecting profits and productivity. She studied retailers that treat their employees well and found some fascinating similarities. She wrote about them in a book titled The Good Jobs Strategy, How the Smartest Companies Invest in Employees to Lower Costs and Boost Profits. She's an adjunct associate professor at the MIT Sloan School of Management, joins us from the studios of MIT. And Zeynep Tan, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me, Marty.
So what is a good job? If that's a bad job, what's a good job?
Well, the good job has multiple elements. At a minimum, it offers fair wages and predictable schedules so that employees can have a stable life, so that they can hold on to a second job if they have to. And a good job also offers opportunities for growth, advancement opportunities, and opportunities for success. One of the biggest problems I saw when I was looking at bad jobs was how frustrated employees were because they were not able to do a good job in front of the customers, and they were failing in front of the customer every single day. So the good job offers an opportunity for success and allows the employee to take pride in what they do every day.
So if we're talking about, let's say 20% of the workforce having these quote-unquote bad jobs, is it largely in the retail sector, in the retail industry? Is it also fast food workers as well?
I think the bad jobs with poverty-level wages, unpredictable schedules, and few opportunities for growth and success are prevalent in retail as well as some fast food and other low-wage industries.
And why is that?
I think one of the reasons is that the conventional wisdom is that if we want to offer the lowest prices to the customers, the only way to do that is to buy keeping our expenses low. And because labor is often seen just as an expense in the mindset of executives, they try to minimize that expense. And by making that choice of seeing labor as just an expense to be minimized, the result is, yes, low prices, but also loss of productivity, bad customer service, and lots of other problems.
You detail and basically give a profile of a couple of companies, Quick Trip, which is out in the West or the Midwest, Trader Joe's, I think familiar to people here on the East Coast, Costco as well. What do they do to, in a sense, allow them to both have low prices but also be able to pay their employees generally and comparatively well compared to others in the retail business?
Yeah, so Mari, this was fascinating to me because the first 6-7 years of my research, I focused on companies that were offering bad jobs and were stuck in a vicious cycle. And I saw that it was bad for customers, bad for investors because it led to lost profits and sales opportunities and downright brutal for employees. And then I said, it doesn't have to be that way. There has to be some companies that operate differently. And my first stop actually was Spain's largest supermarket chain, Mercadona. And my second stop was Quick Trip, the convenience store chain with gas stations. These two companies both offer much higher wages to their employees than their competitors do. They offer more stability. For example, Mercadona offers their employees their schedules, work schedules, 1 month in advance, whereas the typical in retail is about 1 or 2 weeks in advance. And these companies are extremely profitable, more than their competitors, and offer low prices to their customers. And one of the companies is a supermarket chain. The other is a convenience store. So they are very different in so many ways. The products are different. Their customers are different. The size of their stores are different. But when I look into what was enabling them to offer good jobs, low prices, great financial performance all at the same time, I found the answer in operational strategy, in operational excellence. I saw that these companies were designing their operations very different than their competitors. In places like retail, fast food, the prominent way to design an operations is to use people as interchangeable parts, depend very little on the judgment of employees. But these companies, instead of using their employees as interchangeable parts, they design a whole strategy around very capable, competent, motivated workforce. Their operation strategy only works with that workforce. I can give you a few examples
of
exactly what they do in their operation strategy. For example, these companies all empower their employees to make decisions for their customers. At a Quick Trip convenience store chain, employees order merchandise. They have a very good sense of what's selling and what's not selling because they are in contact with their customers every single day. So they participate in figuring out what they should order for the store. Here, they're contributing to the store's success a lot more than just shelving merchandise at some other places. Another thing that these companies do is they cross-train their employees. So their employees are able to perform multiple functions so that when, you know, they might be shelving merchandise, but if they see a long line of customers at the checkout, they'll just go open another cash register. And that way, they can, again, contribute a lot more to customer service. They can be a lot more productive, and their job is a better job because of cross-training. Another very common practice that I saw between these two retailers is that while most other retailers, because they see their employees just as a cost to be minimized and they try to minimize that cost, they tend to understaff their stores. Your listeners might think about their recent shopping trips and how frequently they see nobody who can help them in the aisles. But these companies deliberately have more staff on hand than what they expect the workload to be. That way, their employees can offer great service. That way, their employees can do everything that they have to do. And that way, their employees can actually involve in process improvement, product involvement, so that they can help reduce costs. So these companies invest in employees so that employees can reduce other costs related to products, related to processes. And one other thing that I saw in common between these companies, and I saw the exact same practices as at Trader Joe's and at Costco as well, is that they simplify their operations so that their employees can be a lot more productive. They simplify their operations so that they can do their jobs without errors. For example, you go to a typical supermarket, there are 40,000 different products. You go to Mercadona, there are 8,000.
And that's a supermarket in Spain.
That's a supermarket, Spain's largest supermarket chain. And you see the same thing at Costco or Trader Joe's. Fewer products, you know, if you go to a Trader Joe's and you're looking for a type of jam and they don't have it, an employee there will be able to help you find something that could be a substitute. They will know everything about the jams in their aisle. Why? Because there are only 14, 15 types as opposed to their competitors, which can have as many as 150 types of jams in their aisles. And this way, the Trader Joe employee can contribute a lot more to customer service because they can substitute for high product variety. And this, again, allows companies to reduce their costs.
Well, let me pick up on a couple of things that you just said there, which is actually quite fascinating. But one is the belief that your employees, and oftentimes these are called low-skill jobs, although I don't believe that they actually are, but it's the belief that these people have skills that can be put to work that can make people feel productive on the one hand, but also be good for the company. It's an attitude about these employees, it seems.
Absolutely. It's an attitude about the employees, and it's an attitude about how you design the job, even in the same exact same setting. You know, think about, go to the old times and think about auto manufacturing and think about Henry Ford. When he started, you know, when he innovated that assembly line, his idea was to use people as interchangeable parts, right? And he has a famous saying that, why do I have to hire a whole person when all I need is a pair of hands? And that's how the job was designed, interchangeable. But Toyota took the exact same job, exact same context, and innovated it so that now people are empowered to identify problems. People are empowered to improve processes every single day. It's the same context, a very job design. They have very different mentality around what employees can do and design the job in that way. And I see the exact same thing in modern, you know, retail now. You can take a setting, move it from using people as interchangeable parts to a very human-centered operation strategy. It is possible, profitable, and great for everyone.
There's a lot of news of late about raising the minimum wage and also creating a living wage, a couple of cities that are either looking at that or have done that. The focus being that if you pay people $15 an hour, that will give them job satisfaction. Is that enough from your perspective?
It's absolutely not enough. And it's not just my perspective or my opinion. This is what I've observed in my research. First of all, if you change nothing else about the job and all you do is to increase minimum wages, then that might not be a great outcome either for the company or for the worker. You know, if your wage is higher now, but you have fewer hours and your schedules are still unpredictable and you are not even given enough time to do your job every day and you're not given enough hours, your job is still a bad job. So it doesn't go too far for employees. Now, if you look at the employer's perspective, if they have, you know, economists argue they have this efficiency wage argument that, you know, it pays companies, it can pay companies to pay above the market wages because then they can attract more skilled employees and those employees will be motivated to work harder and stay on the job. But that efficiency wage argument does not go too far if your entire operation strategy is designed around using people as interchangeable parts. If all a person does is to stock merchandise, and now you're paying them so much more for doing the same job, their contribution will be very limited, no matter how motivated they are. So increasing wages does not go far enough for either employers or employees.
And what you're saying, and I guess what these companies did was to cross-train, which is, yes, you might be stocking shelves, but you also might be working the cash register. You also might be doing other responsibilities or duties at your workplace. And that what creates a sense of, I mean, I guess it gives people greater skills, and that's probably a good thing, but also kind of a greater sense of responsibility.
Yes. I mean, it's cross-train along with empowerment, along with participating in problem solving and improvement, along with having a bigger contribution to customer service, all these practices that improve people's ability to contribute to customer company's success is what's needed. A different operation strategy is what's needed if we want to create a solution where employees, employers, customers all win.
We are talking about creating good jobs, not just well-paying jobs, but good jobs in this hour of Radio Times. And our guest is Zeynep Tan. She's adjunct associate professor at the MIT Sloan School of Management. Wrote a book called The Good Job Strategy that we've been talking about. The book subtitled How the Smartest Companies Invest in Employees to Lower Costs and Boost Profits. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. And you can join us at Radio Times at WHYY.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Zeynep Tan about good jobs and bad jobs. And you can join the conversation. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Zeynep, there's something you referenced a couple of times, and I just want to spend a little more time talking about it. And this has to do with people's schedules and perhaps unpredictable schedules or irregular schedules that many people have, I guess, if they're not working full-time and perhaps part of the retail workforce as well. Flesh that out for us.
Yes, so most retailers offer their employees their schedules, work schedules, 1 or 2 weeks in advance, and those schedules can change considerably from week to week. And Marty, by the way, this is not just for part-timers. This is often for full-timers as well. In fact, in some chains, I have interviewed hourly managers who have been there for years who still have very unpredictable schedules. If you're a full-timer in retail, you can work 30 or more hours. So your income can vary from week to week from 30 hours at minimum or 40 hours. And when you work also varies week to week, which means that it's hard for you to make a budget. It's hard for you to hold on to a second job because your current job's schedule is very unpredictable. And for those people who have children to take care of or other duties, this is really, really hard. And by the way, the median age of a retail salesperson is 35 years old.
Wow. So they are, these are clearly adults.
These are clearly adults. These are not high school kids that want very, that will be fine with unpredictable or varying schedules all the time. These are adults, and this is their livelihood. And unpredictable schedules make it very difficult for them.
If this is a profitable formula, why isn't everyone using it? I mean, if it's good for employees, but it's also good for the bottom line, why isn't everyone treating their employees this way?
So you mean if a good job strategy is a better strategy for companies, why aren't more companies offering more predictable schedules, higher wages, etc.? There are multiple reasons. One reason is that they don't have to. They can still make money offering bad jobs and bad service. People will work for them as long as there aren't enough good jobs, and customers will keep buying for them as long as their prices are low enough. And we know that achieving excellence is a lot harder than achieving mediocrity. Mm. So a lot of companies are stuck in mediocrity. The second reason is that the good job strategy requires a long-term perspective. And a lot of companies find it difficult to think long-term. And a third reason is that a good job strategy is a holistic strategy that requires involvement from multiple areas. You know, it's a merchandising, operations, human resources. And a lot of companies operate in silos. They don't work together with the objective of achieving, great value for the customer. So these are just some of the reasons that we see companies choosing to operate differently.
And do bad jobs result in bad service?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the only reason I'm an operations management professor. I'm not an economist. I'm not a human resource person. The only reason that I started looking into this was because years ago, my background is supply chain management. Mm-hmm. And in supply chain management, we study inventory. We're not as excited about people. So our the objective in retail supply chains is to get the right product to the right store at the right time. And we were working with a bunch of companies. This was actually a big project with Wharton, your business school, and Harvard Business School. And our objective was, retailers have all these data. Why don't we apply smart algorithms to these data to help them make better decisions in their inventory planning, assortment optimization, etc.? And then we were stuck with a surprise. We found that while most retailers did a very good job getting the right product to the right store, they dropped the ball in the last 10 yards of the supply chain. So the product will make it all the way from Asia and be stuck in the back room, never make it to the selling floor. So a customer who's looking for that product will experience a stuck out. Your listeners, think about the instances where you've been to a store. They tell you, you're looking for something. They tell you that it's in stock, but no one can find it. And you waste so much time. People waste so much time. And then you leave the store frustrated. We found that problems like this happened all the time, and they led to lost sales for companies, they led to frustrated customers, and lost profits. And when I looked into why these problems, like phantom stockouts, happened all the time, I saw that stores that had more employee turnover had more problems. Hmm. Stores that had less training had more problems. Stores that had less staffing, just not enough people to do everything that needs to be done, to more problems. And that was the origins of this Good Job Strategy book.
Well, I wonder, too, whether customers leave frustrated but perhaps come back because it's the only store in town or because the prices are so low they're willing to put up with some frustrations.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think as we see internet taking more sales, e-commerce taking more sales away from bricks and mortar stores, companies will have to find reasons other than low prices to attract their customers. So I'm hoping that current trends will encourage them to adopt a good job strategy because customers will be demanding it.
Well, I wonder, you mentioned Costco, but I'm also thinking of Walmart. I'm assuming these are two big retailers who probably are in a lot of competition with each other. Is that a good experiment to run to see what works in one set of criteria and what appears to work in another?
Yeah, I mean, Costco's direct competitor will be Walmart Sam's Club, and Costco is known, yes, to be following the good job strategy. And when you look at what Costco returns to their investors over the long term, it's way ahead of Walmart. So they are showing that the strategy actually works really well, even for large companies, even for public companies.
Well, as you mentioned, and perhaps the operative word is long term. In many ways, investors, they want their profits now. Are investors willing to wait long term in order to get the kind of return on their money?
You know, not all investors are the same. So Costco's Jim Sinegal, the founder of Costco, co-founder Jim Sinegal, comes to my class every year. And this is one of the questions that my students ask. How can you be a public company and still operate this way? And he talks about instances where analysts would be upset at Costco because they just missed their earnings target. And an analyst would say, you know, Costco is much nicer to their employees than they are to their shareholders. But they, you know, Costco ignored those comments and said, we are running the business not for next Tuesday, but for the next 50 years. And this is our strategy. And if you don't want to invest in us, don't invest with us. And over time, they were able to attract long-term investors. So not all investors are short-term. And there are those that are looking for long-term returns. And those investors tend to be very happy investing in companies like Costco. Berkshire Hathaway is Costco's biggest fan.
Oh, interesting. How much, though, does the government, in a sense, subsidize low-wage workers? I mean, we know many of them have to rely on food stamps, for instance, in order to be able to cover the cost of feeding their family.
Yes, I mean, in some ways, maybe that's the right way to put it, is that the government ends up subsidizing some of these low wages because people just can't buy with the incomes that they make working at these places. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I'm not sure.
Let me quickly reintroduce you. That's Zeynep Tan. She's adjunct associate professor at the MIT Sloan School of Management. Wrote a book called The Good Jobs Strategy. That's what we're talking about, how the smartest companies invest in employees to lower costs and boost profits. And a line's open at 1-888-477-9499. We'd particularly like to hear from the people who work or manage retail operations. You can call us at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Any questions or comments to join our conversation. Zeynep, I was doing some reading in preparation for the show today, and I read that something like 30% of men in their prime years are either not working or are underemployed. And this, in many ways, I think is the fallout of the recession. But when we think about this sort of lost asset that we have in this country, and even thinking about what a good job strategy is, how do we connect these two?
I mean, one way that I can talk about that is that the companies that do offer follow a good job strategy tend to be extremely successful, and they tend to grow and employ more people. If we can focus on creating jobs like this, I think that would be great for the economy in general.
Because these are employers, that are growing, adding to the workforce, and hopefully some of these men, as an example, can be hired into these companies?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I wonder, too, how much of what we're talking about is because of the fact that there are fewer union members, labor unions aren't what they used to be. Does that in some way explain the numbers of, quote-unquote, bad jobs that we have in this country?
I think my colleagues who look at, you know, worker relations would make the argument that the reason that the median income has not grown in this country over the last 25 years, one reason is that the union strength has come down over time. that probably does explain part of why the wages have been very low. Whether the lack of union is the reason why companies are following a bad job strategy is hard to say.
Mm. Let me get some callers in. We have, it looks like, Dean from Morristown, New Jersey, joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Dean. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Marty.
Good morning.
Good morning. I apologize. Your guest name eludes me at the moment.
Zane Uptown.
I am a Chicago MBA, former Bain consultant and corporate strategy companies in consumer products. I ran a bagel store for 5 years. Your guest is exactly right.
Really?
Good employees are worth way more than what we would call the market rate, especially in businesses where your hourly employees are directly interacting with your guests or your customers. There is no question. It is not necessarily a question of the minimum wage rate. It is a question of the business strategy and the value that the employees bring to the greater value creation of the enterprise. There is no question about it. And if you look at companies like Whole Foods, Starbucks, Chipotle, Costco, it goes Wawa, it goes on and on and on. The examples are innumerable, and in every case, the employees that are happier and more well-paid stay longer, create better guest experiences, and those businesses win over time. There's no question about it.
Dean, I'm curious, when you ran the bagel store, what did you pay your employees?
So we would that's a great question, Marty. So what I would do is I would hire an employee, and I would hire them in at the hourly market rate. And after 8 weeks, if they worked out and were sort of hired on permanently, I would pay them 50% over the market rate. And the reason for that is finding good hourly employees who show up, who treat your business like it's theirs, and who treat your customers like it's theirs are very difficult to find. And once you find them, keeping them is absolutely the linchpin in the entire ecosystem.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me give our guest, Zane Uptown, a chance to respond to that. And we're talking about an employer willing to train and invest in their hourly employees.
Yes, Dean, thank you so much for your comment. Even though you have not come to my school, MIT Sloan, or my alma mater, Harvard Business School, we still forgive you. Thank you for the comment, and I totally agree with you. And one thing that you mentioned was that a good job strategy relies on employees who are willing to work hard, who are enthusiastic and have great attitudes. And the companies that I've studied have a lot more rigorous recruitment practices than their competitors do. I mean, Quick Trip, for example, convenience store chain with gas stations, they know that they want to hire the best. This is a high-performance organization. You can't survive if you're not a high performer. So they have a very rigorous recruitment practice where they have multiple interviews, they have a math test, and you have to go over these hurdles to be able to be hired by Quick Trip. And then you go through a training program, and about 75% of the employees can complete the training program, 25% don't, because they're not suitable for the company. So at the same time that we want companies to adopt good job strategies, we also need to work on our workforce to be able to create a workforce that's hardworking, that has the necessary skills to be able to take these jobs.
I'm wondering, too, about people working in the retail sector having to have these quote-unquote people skills. I mean, these are ones sometimes that don't show up on a test, but the ability to deal with the public. Is that a factor, Zainab?
Yes. I mean, when they do interviews, sometimes there are group interviews that have your people skills, or they ask you questions about how you will respond to certain customers' requests to see if you can think on the spot, because there are all sorts of requests that come from your employees, from your customers. So you need to be able to adapt to what your local customers want and need. And that skill is quite important. I'll give you one example.
Sure.
If you are a checkout person and you work at a supermarket, sometimes speed might be super important, right? Because you have a long line of customers and they want to get out as fast as possible. But some customers, and during certain times, chatting might be more appropriate. And you want that employee to be able to manage that that variability from your customers. You want to have that flexibility. An employee who can make the judgment, now is time to work as fast as possible, or now is time to offer more smiles and be more chatty. So things like this matter in environments where people, you know, employees are facing customers every single day.
I'm curious about in these good companies, as we're talking about them, how are employees managed? Is there a different management approach?
I mean, their work is designed in a way that brings the best in people. When you say manage, I'm not sure what you're referring to, but I think one of the biggest factors in terms of providing motivation for workers in this setting is the design of the job.
Mm. Oh, so a job that, in a sense, is designed to be productive and to bring some satisfaction to the person doing it?
Yes, yes. And for the person to thrive in front of their customers, for the person to be empowered. If a kid comes, you're at a convenience store chain, they spill a drink, you don't have to go ask your supervisor, what do I do now? Can I offer them a free drink or not? You know, to be able to make these judgment calls on your own, which enables you to offer a much better customer service. And that autonomy, we know, also drives motivation for people. I think when we think about managing people, we tend to think too much on, you know, the pay and the benefits and performance reviews, all that stuff, but not enough time on the job that we design for them so that they can do a good job, so that they can find meaning in what they do, so that they can be proud of what they do.
A kind of empowerment, I guess, giving the employee a certain autonomy and control over their life at work.
Yes, autonomy, control, the tools to be able to do a good job, all of that.
We are talking about good jobs in this hour of Radio Time. Zeynep Tan is our guest. Again, adjunct associate professor at the MIT Sloan School of Management, and she wrote a book we've been talking about called The Good Jobs Strategy. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation, getting a lot of email comments here. You can also call us, 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. You probably noticed that a lot of news recently or of late is about things like living wages, increasing the minimum wage. And we're talking with our guest, Zeynep Tan. She's MIT associate professor and has been looking at the retail industry and finding some interesting parallels and similarities between jobs that pay well, that give people some autonomy, some control over their work environment, and it turns out they are profitable as well. Does this sound like you? We want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read a couple of emails here. We have an email from Dan, and he says, I find that the workplace environment is also important. I know several employees of Target who enjoy their workplace partly because of store layout, bright colors, good lighting. There's also one of many reasons I enjoy shopping at Target, much different than the jammed aisles, dark colors, dark tones of Walmart or Kmart. How much does that factor in, just the environment that people work in?
I mean, to the extent that they contribute to their ability to provide good service and do their jobs well and be happy, the environment could matter. It's not something that I have studied. And your listener could look at, you know, online scores for Target versus Walmart to see whose employees are happier. Hmm. You know, look at places like Glassdoor that will give an indication of whether there, in fact, is a difference between these two companies. Because I have a feeling that they have a lot more similarities than differences when it comes to employee satisfaction.
Mm. And happiness from your, or satisfaction from your perspective, is this ability to control your work environment, to have some say in what you do and have the ability to, what, advance along the job as well?
Yes. I mean, you can be in the prettiest office in the world, but if you can't, if you're not... if your job doesn't enable you to do a good job, then you won't be very happy, right? That's the reality.
Another email. This is actually from someone who's anonymous. This has not been my experience, but she says Costco is, or this person says Costco is chronically understaffed. Current employees often asked to do multiple tasks with little time, bad management. I don't know if that's from a former employee or someone that shops there, but, you know, I guess maybe from store to store, things might be different.
It could be, you know, when you manage a chain that has tens or hundreds of thousands of employees, then it wouldn't be a surprise that some stores or some locations might have different practices than others. But when you look at the overall employee satisfaction and customer satisfaction at Costco, their numbers are so high on average that it seems like both customers are very satisfied and employees are very satisfied.
How important is advancement at a company?
Oh, these companies that I've studied all offer internal promotion policies. And in fact, many of them have policies that you cannot be a store manager or even other, you know, assistant manager unless you were hired as an hourly employee. They rely on their people to have growth and advancement in their job. And that's why it's a good job for people, because you know that you can start as a clerk, a sales clerk, but then you might have the opportunity to be a department manager one day and then an assistant manager and a store manager. And that advancement opportunity is a big deal.
I also hear, and then we'll get back to our callers, is that these stores have very high standards for their employees. And I'm assuming not everyone would pass an employee test. Not everyone would get hired who are applying for these kinds of jobs.
Absolutely. And when you look at, you know, you mentioned Costco, for example, Costco's employee turnover occurs usually in the first year. If you have stayed there for a year, then the probability that you would leave is very low. In fact, their turnover for if you've stayed there for more than a year is less than 6%, because it is a very physically demanding environment. And again, you have to be a high performer to be able to stay there. Same thing with Quick Trip. If you have passed the first 6 months, chances are you're going to stay there for the rest of your career. But these are high demanding environments where you are expected to do a good job. And if there is no pressure from your managers, there will be peer pressure from your coworkers, because everybody has, you know, the only way a company can pay their employees more is if their employees generate more. Mm. And as a result, they have to be able to generate more so that the company could respond by higher wages.
So we're talking about teamwork here.
Teamwork, yes.
I wonder, too, about things like benefits. And you know, U.S. workers, apparently, we've been described as no vacation nation, is that we often don't get a lot of vacation days, or workers don't, or they don't even use them. Are things like benefits, vacations, is that all part of this formula, this package?
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things that's part of the formula is, can you take time off when you need to take time off? If your child gets sick, if there's an emergency, are you able to take time off? And not many low-wage environments offers this type of flexibility for their employees. One thing that Quick Trip does, for example, this is one of my favorite examples. They have an internal number. They say that when their employees want to take time off for either vacations or for emergencies, we want to be able to offer that 95% of the time. And one of the reasons that they can offer that is because they operate with Slack. They have, in every market that they operate, they have extra employees. They call them relief employees, who don't report to any store, but go to the stores that need them. So in the morning, a relief employee will call the headquarters and say, to which store am I assigned? And they will be assigned to the store that needs them, because that store doesn't have certain employees because they have to take time off for emergencies, vacations, etc. But Quick Trip is the only company that I know that has these relief employees that have a plan for dealing with employee vacations or time offs in a productive way.
Let me get, looks like Larry from Delran, New Jersey, to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Larry. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My call isn't necessarily about retailing, but my call really has to do with the difference between a public company and a privately held company. My son lives in the Midwest and works for a very large privately held company. They're a multi-billion-dollar company. but the way they treat their employees is incredible. My son is going to graduate school. He's almost finished with his graduate school, which they're paying for. Mm. They have a tremendous profit-sharing program. They have a tremendous, I'm not sure if you call it a pension program, but they do set aside money for their employees. And I'm having worked for large publicly traded companies, I'm amazed at how well this company treats its employees. And to me, it seems that they really value their employees. Their employees just aren't a number on the profit and loss statement, an expense. And I think this is a big difference between a publicly traded company versus a privately held company that can do the right thing by its employees.
Larry, can we assume that your son is going to stay at this company now that he's got an education thanks to them?
There are some other things going on in his life, but I would think that he would like to stay at that company for the long haul.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Larry, thanks so much for calling in. Zeynep, I mean, go ahead. Sounds like you want to say something.
Yes, Larry. Yeah. I was going to say, you know, I studied four companies, Larry, that were able to offer low prices, good jobs, great performance all at the same time. Three out of the four are private companies, and only one is a public company. And in general, we see that private companies can do a much better job thinking about the long term than the public companies. So your observation is exactly right, and we tend to see that when we look at different sectors.
Larry, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Zeynep, it also sounds like that's a good example of loyalty. I mean, this sort of sense that we will help you. This would be the employer talking to the employee, and the employee feeling some sense of loyalty to the company.
The employee feels a sense of loyalty, and of course, if there are opportunities for advancement in the company, then with that loyalty, they can stay longer, right? They can be very loyal, but if all they can do is to stay as a full-time clerk and there are no promotion opportunities, that loyalty probably may not go as far. But if there are, if there's the loyalty along with opportunities for advancement within the company, then now this person can have a career in this company that they love. And that's what I see at companies like Quick Trip and Mercadona. People stay, they come as, you know, full-timers or part-timers, but then they build a career over time with their employer. And they're very happy because they have a great job. The company is very happy because now they have tenured employees who know exactly what they're doing. And the customers are happy because they're getting great service. And, of course, the investors are happy because they're getting great returns.
Would it be fair to say that the recession and the fallout from the recession, I mean, hurt both companies and also people wanting to work at some of these companies, and that we're just beginning to recover and beginning to think of how to make a workplace a good place to have a job?
Yes. As the labor market gets tighter, companies will think more about how do we attract good talent and how do we keep them. So that will play a role. I mean, there are lots of things in the external market that I hope will move companies into this good job strategy. One of them is the tightening labor markets. The other is that, you know, there are legislative changes. Some cities have increased their minimum wages to $15 an hour. There's a new bill introduced by Elizabeth Warren, Schedules That Worked Act, that will require companies to offer their employees their schedules 2 weeks in advance. Things like this that come from the external world will hopefully encourage more companies to adapt a strategy where their workers can contribute more so that they can be paid more. And, of course, there are some competitive dynamics happening in the retail space and other spaces as well that I hope will be a good encouragement for companies to move into this path.
And competitive coming from online sources?
Part of it is the competition from e-commerce. And then the other is that it's at least in the retailing sector, which, by the way, is the number one largest occupation, according to Bureau of Labor Statistics, is retail salespeople. The next is cashier. So they represent a huge chunk of the workforce. But a lot of retailers are thinking about omni-channel. So this is using the internet as well as their stores as different channels and finding synergies between those. And the omni-channel strategy requires more of the stores and allows store employees to contribute more. So the more that the more demands there are on the store employees, hopefully retailers will recognize and see we have to invest in these workers. We have to give them the tools and processes to be able to do everything that they have to do so we can succeed.
Let me get back to our phones. And we have a couple open lines at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Jake from Langhorne to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Jake. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. Has there been a study done that talks about having your initial pay higher than the market level? And will that bring higher quality employees and make them loyal? You mentioned about having advancement, which I appreciate. But to start off by getting people in or excited about coming into work to give them more money, or is that something that just most will take advantage of and then end up leaving or not being as high quality? And does that, I guess, correspond with having a better screening process?
And you're talking about Jake, coming in at, let's say, $15 an hour versus $12 an hour, something like that?
Or even $18 to $20 an hour. Has there been any studies that talk about it, a certain percentage over market wages will attract better people and you get better return on your money right out of the gate?
I appreciate the call. Zainab, go ahead.
Yeah, so I will give you the theoretical argument that economists make, Jake. This has been around for a long time. Even Janet Yellen has a book called The Efficiency Wage Theory of the Markets. So the efficiency wage theory of economics is that if you pay your employees higher than the market rate, then the companies could attract more skilled employees who will be motivated to stay longer and who will be motivated to work harder. To what extent they have empirical evidence to show this, that wages alone do this, is an open question. But I will give you one example. I was on a panel with the chief HR officer of Gap a couple months ago. And if you remember, last year Gap announced that they would increase the minimum wage of their employees to $9 an hour and then to $10 an hour. And the chief HR officer of Gap said to a group of people that, you know, they have tried so hard before to increase the pool of people who are attracted to work at Gap. They've tried so many things, but nothing worked. But once they increased the wages, they saw a huge increase in the pool of people who want to work at Gap, so they could identify the more skilled people. There is some evidence that it is reducing their employee turnover, but it is too early to tell.
And we're talking about a dollar here, going from $9 an hour to $10 an hour.
Yes,
so but seeing a difference
we are talking
there.
About yes. What is happening right now in New York is a very different story, where we're going from $8.75 an hour to $15 an hour in the fast food industry. What I'm talking about is smaller changes.
Almost out of time here, but an email from Laura says, I worked at Starbucks for a short time. The people I worked with are great, incredibly smart, but what eventually made me leave was that my manager did not stand up for me with a rude customer. This was a woman who came in every day and was consistently mean, rude to all of the baristas. The manager was not making the store a comfortable place for us. And obviously, managers need to stand up for their employees if someone is abusing them.
Good managers are crucial in this, because the managers are in touch with their customers along with the people who report to them every single day. And unless they can make good judgment calls as to how to deal with these employee issues or customer issues, you'll have a lot of unsatisfied employees.
Well, we do have to end on that note. And my thanks to you, Zainab Tan, for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty, for having me.
You're welcome. She's adjunct associate professor at the MIT Sloan School of Management. Wrote a book last year called The Good Jobs Strategy, How the Smartest Companies Invest in Employees to Lower Costs and Boost Profits. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the show. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.